We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today, I'm interviewing Gia Graham of Betsy White. Gia started her stationery business in 2005 and has undergone major transitions over the last 12 years. She's renamed and rebranded her business. She's shifted from custom work to off-the-shelf products. She's ramped up her wholesale program to the point where she was working with big box stores and multiple rep groups. And most recently, she's scaling back and slowing down. On today's episode, we're talking about how Pinterest helped her business, the importance of faking it until you make it, and why she chose to discontinue her wholesale line.
Gia, thank you so much for joining me today. It's so fun to catch up with you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So what was the catalyst for starting Betsy White? What prompted you to launch this business?
Well, it actually started as a different business in 2005. I was working for a design firm and was fairly miserable. And one of my fellow designers and I, you know, at lunch, we were just powwowing and we were like, let's do this. So we decided to start an invitation design business together, which was our kind of side hustle. Mm-hmm. And we were building the business while working full time. And as it turns out, I got laid off a few months into that, but it was perfect because it was the push we needed to just go into this thing full time. So a couple of weeks after I got laid off, she quit and we just went all in. At that time, the business was called Paper Dolls Design. Uh-huh. Yeah. So we were very custom, very local. You know, we got into every local event there was. It was all about custom invitations. And I quickly realized that I did not love that high touch type of business, you know, one-on-ones with clients and talking for 45 minutes about whether or not you want gray, like slate versus pewter. Not for me. So we decided to kind of branch off and have an online component to the wedding invitations.
Okay. Were you going to still sell wedding through that online component?
Or yes.
Were you planning?
So we kind of segued away from custom and designed a whole line of stationery and we took that online. Now, at that time, you know, there was no Shopify. You know, our site was fairly cumbersome and rudimentary. And, but, you know, we got started. And after about 3 years, my partner got an amazing job offer. She couldn't refuse. So she left to do that. And I took over the business. And that's when I took the opportunity to rebrand and name it Betsy White. Okay. One of the reasons, by the way, I decided to rebrand was there were about, 1,600 other paper dolls companies out there.
Right.
Some variation of the name, despite the fact that we owned the trademark. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to start fresh. And I chose Betsy White because it linked to my heritage. I'm from Barbados. And I had this book of Barbadian dialect, and Betsy White was in there. Apparently, it's a bird call. It refers to the chirp of a local bird that we have in Barbados.
Oh,
so I was like,
cool.
Perfect, you know, let's do that. People call me Betsy all the time, but that's neither here nor there. I just like that it kind of had a little connection to Barbados for me.
So I love that.
In 2008 is when I rebranded, got a better online store, and really started pushing the wedding line online. And the timing for that was perfect then because wedding blogs were really hot at the time. It was easy to buy ad space on the blogs, and there was a real very defined avenue for customers and to get business. So that went really well. And I did that for, about 5 years. And within that 5-year span, the online climate really shifted.
Right.
So that was my first big pivot where what was working at one point just started not working. Mm-hmm. And that was because, first of all, the blog started to dwindle. Pinterest came on the scene. So yes. Nobody wanted to read blog posts. So your ads are sitting there unseen on a blog's homepage. Everybody's going to Pinterest and looking at the pretty pictures.
Yeah.
So that was a big shift. And then really huge competitors started to come onto the scene, like Minted, Wedding Paper Divas, you know,
yeah, these who really can do higher volume and exactly, more customization.
Exactly.
They have the infrastructure. I want to push pause for one quick second, mm-hmm, because how have you utilized, like, how did you adjust to these changing dynamics? Did you start utilizing Pinterest and some of these other things to enhance your business at that point?
Yes. Well, I started using Pinterest just because, you know,
It was fun
and I was obsessed with it. And because it was fun for me and I was obsessed with it, I started to grow a following. And I was fairly early on the Pinterest scene. That was back when you had to get a password. I think it was still in beta at the time.
Interesting.
So Pinterest came on the scene and that made a big change in how I was able to connect with customers.
Yeah.
So at that point is when I realized that I needed to branch out a little bit more and not just offer wedding stationery, but offer more off the shelf kind of grab and go items as well.
So that was because of the patterns you were seeing on Pinterest?
Yeah, it was because of the pattern that I was seeing with the shift in how customers were finding me, mm-hmm, a small online business compared to, you know, the bigger offerings. So it wasn't as easy to connect with customers with just the wedding invitations anymore.
Right.
So I realized that I needed to pivot a little bit so that, you know, I stay afloat.
Of course.
So that's when I kept it in the sphere of weddings, but I started offering the napkins, mm-hmm, and a couple other, you know, wedding related items. And I also noticed that on Pinterest, people loved having someone else curate a party for them. You know, they wanted to get the inspiration. They wanted to be told, well, this goes with this, goes with this. So even though in the beginning, Pinterest was the catalyst for losing customers on the blogs, I ended up making it work to my advantage because with the wedding party items, I was able to push those on Pinterest and I got a lot of traction with that. In addition to that, because I was an early adapter with Pinterest, I was given an invite to beta test their, it's not quite pay-per-click, but I guess essentially they're advertising.
Okay.
When they first started it. And that worked really well for me. So I was using the Pinterest ads, getting a ton of traffic and, you know, selling through merchandise like nobody's business.
How did you learn how to do that? How did you learn how to create the ads and how much to spend on ads and how to direct them?
Well, at that time, it was fairly easy to figure it out. You know, they were just starting to offer that to, mm-hmm, their users. And it was a really simple setup, a really simple format. And it, compared to how it is now, it was fairly cheap, you know?
Yeah.
I could set up a, you know, cost of like 50 cents or 35 cents or whatever it was for each click and it would work. I just figured it out. It wasn't a very complicated system at the time and it was highly effective and it was well worth the investment.
That's awesome.
Now, however, fast forward to 2017, that has shifted again.
Yeah.
Because the more popular Pinterest has become, the more they've opened up their ads and, mm-hmm, now it, you know, it's outrageously expensive and you don't get the same amount of return on investment as I was,
you know,
4 or 5 years ago.
I will say to your credit though, too, you have always had beautiful photography. your products and your catalogs and all of your marketing and all of that. And so, you know, Pinterest, you know, all the experts, I'm not one, but all the experts talk about how it's a wonderful search engine, but it's a visual search engine. Absolutely. And so I really think that you have the upper hand given your beautiful photography too, and that you were able to create these ads utilizing those photos that you'd taken. And just, I think that was a huge kudos to you for that.
Thank you so much. And I didn't take the pictures at that time. Shout out to my amazing friend and photographer, Claudia Lopez. But we've always had a really great dynamic. She shot my very first portfolio in college. So, you know, we have shorthand. We know how to communicate. I do the styling. She shoots. And that, from the absolute very beginning, has been a leg up for us. So when I started Dolls Design back in 2005, we had nothing. We knew nothing, but we could take some damn good photos.
So we actually... Well, it's a fake it till you make it type of thing. I mean, if you can style your photos and your products in ways that people can see themselves using them or having them in their home, they want to buy. They want to experience that. Absolutely. You're creating an experience with your photos.
Let me tell you. In 2005, we had no business, but we were friends with an excellent photographer, and we had the frame of mind of designers working for a big firm. So, you know, for work, we were art directing shoots and setting up shoots and all that. So here we were with no real business, and we had a weekend-long photo shoot on site. Like, we had a location. We had props. We had two truckloads of props. And I mean, we went all out. We shot, I think, maybe 10 or 12 fully styled on location photos of fake products. Oh my gosh.
I so want to see these portfolios of fake products. I would like to see these photos. Can you please send me the link? Like, I don't care. I think it's impressive. I do.
It was just beautifully done and entirely fake. But it showed, you know, what we were capable of at that time.
Right. It showed your aesthetic. It showed your style. And it showed what people were buying into when they wanted to.
So, yeah, the fake it till you make it absolutely works. So I made that shift away from just doing wedding invitations and branched off into doing, you know, the party napkins and stuff like that.
Yeah. And for there, you sold retail on your own website, and you were also selling wholesale.
Well, I hadn't
jumped into wholesale?
Not yet. Okay. So when I kind of made that step away from just doing wedding invitations, I was like, well, why don't I just take it a step further? Why limit myself to the wedding industry as a whole? I can do other things. And that's when I started to play with the idea of, you know, creating a line that I could potentially wholesale.
Okay.
So that's when I found you. This was 2013 at this point. Yeah. I did Paper Camp, and it was fantastic. And my eyes were opened, and I was like so excited. And that was October of 2013. And I launched at the Stationery Show in May of 2014. Because why not? Just jump on
in. Because we do things like that. I did the same. You know my story. I decided to start my business in October and launched at the next Stationery Show, which was bananas.
Yeah. But
yeah.
And, you know, it can be completely bananas. It can work as well, you know, but it's a little nutty. So, yeah. So that's when I jumped into wholesale and completely made a shift.
So let's fast forward to 2017 now.
Right.
Earlier this year, you made the decision to discontinue selling to the wholesale market. Mm-hmm. Was that a tough decision for you?
It wasn't. It was actually last summer, so summer of 2016.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And the catalyst for that was our second son was born super, super prematurely, like almost 3 months premature. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're standing there in the NICU, there's a 2-pound baby laying there, and suddenly you have laser focus.
Of course.
So we knew immediately that he couldn't start daycare for at least a year because his little lungs wouldn't be able to handle, you know, coughing babies. So I knew I would have to be at home with him. which was never in the plan, but you know, you don't think twice when it comes to your kids.
Of course.
And I knew I couldn't be at home with him and continue, you know, the rigorous pace of wholesaling because it is rigorous. So I say it was easy and it was not easy because I was forced to step outside of the hustle and look at it from the outside. And, you know, that helped me to really take stock and think about what I really wanted. And to be perfectly honest, I realized I don't want to have this pace forever and eternity. I am at the stage of life, you know, maybe if I was in my 20s, maybe. But I'm at the stage of life where I was like, wait a minute, I don't want to work this hard for this long, you know, without an end to it. You know what I mean? I loved I loved designing products. I love all of that. But what I didn't love was the never-ending churn. You know, there's you have to have new product every season. You have to be constantly planning for it. You know, you're thinking 6 months out, sometimes longer, depending on whether or not you have really big accounts. So it's pretty nonstop. And if you are a small business, like if you don't have the staff that you can kind of distribute that level of responsibility to, it can get really tough.
Well, that was what crossed my mind as I was listening to you talk. Did you ever at any point think about outsourcing pieces of this to lighten your load? I mean, taking your family situation out of the picture, because I completely understand. I would have done the same thing. My family's comes first always. But, you know, had you considered dispersing some of the responsibilities?
I did to an extent. For example, I had somebody else packaging product for me, you know, folding and sleeving cards. I didn't do any of that. I had somebody else doing all of that for me. But there's only so much of that you can do, you know?
Yeah.
I was still doing all of the design work. I was still doing all of the product development, dealing with vendors, dealing with accounts, you know, dealing with QuickBooks, which is so not my thing and was always very stressful for me. So, you know, and it's a balance because you kind of have to weigh, you know, how much you're willing to put out to pay for other services versus how much you want to put into new product development. You know, it's always a juggle. It's always a balance.
Of course. Where do you want to spend the money?
Exactly.
How are you going to allocate your time?
Exactly. So, so I was kind of forced to make a decision. And only when that happened, I realized that I actually do want to change. I do want to step back. I do want to slow down. I do want to make work fit my life rather than, you know, the other way around, which was becoming really stressful.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you just have to take stock of where you are in life, what is going to work for you. You cannot look at what anybody else is doing because first of all, you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes.
100%.
And you know, you have to just figure out, well, how am I going to craft this so that it works for me and works for what I want out of my day-to-day life, you know? And I think that that is something that is really easy to forget or not realize unless you're forced to, because a lot of the messaging is, you know, keep hustling and, you know, die trying and all of this. But, you know, in reality, you need to take a break. You need a vacation every once in a while. You need to take a nap. I'm all about the nap.
I wish I could take naps. Go on. Sorry, I digress.
So I'm actually grateful that I had the opportunity to pause and really look at the situation and figure out what, you know, would work best for me and what I really wanted out of my career, my job, and my life.
I feel like it provided you with clarity.
It did.
That you may not have, like you said, you were forced into it, mm-hmm. so you might not have done it on your own accord. So how has your life and your business changed since you've made this big shift in discontinuing wholesale?
Right. So there has been a big change. And, you know, like I was telling you earlier, it's, even though it was so necessary and it was a change that I realized after the fact that I wanted, it yeah. was still tough because, you know, it had been 10 plus years that I have been in this, okay, what's next? What are we doing? This mentality of constantly going, working towards some goal or another. There was always a new goal.
Right.
And that hustle mentality. And so it took several months for me to kind of gear down from that, you know, to just shift mm-hmm. gears and get my mind to settle. Mm-hmm. So even though I wanted it and it was essential for me, it was still difficult. It took a while for me to kind of recalibrate and
As a person,
yes. Mm-hmm. So, and being a stay-at-home mom, that was not really a goal, to be perfectly honest. You know, people make mm-hmm. you think that you should want to do it, but it's not for everybody.
It's not. And I give mad props to the women that are stay-at-home moms because it is the most difficult job
Absolutely.
Ever.
Absolutely. I give mad props to anybody with more than two children as well, Katie.
thank you.
But yeah, no, it's not for everybody. And it's definitely, if you've been working all of your life, it's definitely a shift that you have to readjust to, which I'm much better at now than I was in the beginning, but it's a shift for sure. So yeah, that took some time, but business wise, I've scaled way back. So I've downsized my online store mm-hmm. quite a bit, and I'm actually going to downsize some more.
In terms of the number of products offered?
The number of products offered, the types of products offered.
Okay.
And, you know, I had to kind of change the way I approach things with work.
In what respect?
In terms of not feeling, like for a while there, I still had the mentality of, oh, I haven't put anything new in like 2 months. I got to get some new stuff up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've kind of just really shifted and now I'm, you know, I'm doing things on my own terms now because I'm not beholden to any particular schedule.
Right.
So, and it's weird that it took me forever to realize that, hey, you're your own boss. Do what works
well,
for you.
But it's because you spent so much time climbing this ladder and trying to get to the goals that you were trying to achieve at the time, which was expansion and more revenue and more. And you were, correct me if I'm wrong, working with sales reps
yep.
in the wholesale side.
Yep.
You were working with big box stores on the wholesale side.
Yep.
So when you talk about you were beholden to their schedules, you were truly beholden to specific schedules. You were not deciding how often to release things because those accounts and those relationships were really determined based upon regular release schedules.
Absolutely. So yeah, it took me a while to just be like, Gia, just chill out. You don't have to release something, you know, if you don't feel like it. Hey, what do you know? So yeah, I'm now kind of settling into the fact that I can kind of do things on my own terms. I've downsized and moving forward, the goal now is to figure out how to work even smarter rather than working harder.
Amen, girlfriend. You know, that's my mantra.
Absolutely. And it's so necessary, you know?
It is.
It's easy to kind of trying to turn those wheels and keep spinning in one direction, but it really is absolutely necessary if you want to have some semblance of sanity.
Well, and sustainability
yeah.
too, right? Like if you want to do something in the long term, you need to make it so that you're not having to recreate the wheel every time you do something. Absolutely. Or you're not creating obstacles for yourself to get to that end goal. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's phenomenal. I appreciate you sharing that story with us. And just so everyone knows, your son is healthy and doing wonderfully well.
He's a chunk of chunks and he is doing great. He just had his first birthday and everything's wonderful with him. He had no health problems whatsoever. So that's great.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
And he sleeps through the night, so
mom. Which I'm happy. Jealous about. Good. Excellent.
So yeah, but moving forward now, my goal is to kind of shift a little bit so that, like, I'm looking into offering products that I can have manufactured and shipped from by a third party so that
print on demand.
I can, yeah, print on demand so I can eliminate holding inventory, eliminate, you know, drop-offs at FedEx and the post office, you know, all of that.
Well, frankly, when I was listening to you talk, that was the first thing across my mind. I said, we need to talk after we're done recording about print-on-demand options. Yeah. And I have some ideas for you.
Looking into that. And I'm also starting to look into building relationships for licensing.
Perfect. You'd be great at that.
So, and, you know, I've been talking to some alums who are super sweet and helpful. Erica is one of them, and getting lots of advice about venturing into that. But that's another way that I can, you know, continue to design and do the things that I love without having the pressures of manufacturing and holding inventory and all of that. So,
it's so good to hear you talk about this. And it's, I know everyone on this listening can't see your face like I can right now, but the amount of just peace that you have and excitement for what's in store and what's coming ahead. It's very fun to see that in you.
Yay, thank you.
So yeah, congratulations. I know that those were tough decisions to make along the way. And I know you had, you know, the hurdles with your family life as well. And I feel like this is a wonderful example to everyone listening that you need to follow your own path. You need to do what's best for you, for your family, for your business. Whatever your goals are going to be different than somebody else's.
Absolutely. And the other thing is you have to determine for yourself what success looks like.
Yes.
You know, it's so easy to fall into the trap of seeing somebody else doing something and it's going well for them and thinking that you have to model your life or your business after them. Your success does not have to look like their success. And your success might not even be monetary. You know, you have to determine what that is for yourself. And that's something that I think that we often miss. We kind of look to a cookie cutter, you know, rule for what that looks like, but it doesn't look the same for everybody, you know?
No.
So
no, it looks vastly different for everybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I was wholesaling and I had 300 or so accounts and I had 30 plus reps and, you know, being written about in, you know, Stationery Trends and all of those things were wonderful, but that is not what my success needed to look like, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just my little kernel for everybody listening, especially people who are starting out. You know, I get a lot of emails from people who are starting out or who want to start out and they're, you know, wondering what path to take. But I think it's really important to realize that, you know, one person's success might be, you know, designing a card for friends and family every couple of months and loving it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, just figure that out for yourself and don't model your life after anybody else's.
Oh my gosh. Well, I love everything you just said. And in fact, you actually answered my two last questions. What advice do you have for people and what's next for you? But so you're already ahead of the game there. But so where can people find you online to look at the products that you do have or to see the kind of work that you're doing?
Well, my store is betsywhite.com, www.betsywhite.com. And social media-wise, really, I only have time for Instagram. I cannot keep up with all of it, to tell you the truth. So my Instagram handle is shopbetsywhite.
Excellent. And we'll include links to that in the show notes for anybody that's interested too. Well, Gia, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your heart and your story. I mean, I know that this was a tough run for you and it was hard to make these decisions, but I'm so glad to hear that it was the right decision for you and that you're feeling really good about how things have gone. And I'm so happy for you.
Thanks so much. It was so good to chat. That's the only
you
thing.
As well.
That's the one thing I do miss is powwowing and seeing all my paper peeps every year. So it was nice to chat.
Good. Well, you're still in our community, so you can still lean on us whenever you need.
Of course. Thanks so much, Katie.
Thank you.
Hey, friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.